news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton at FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings at 8.07. A few things we're going to get to here this morning before we talk with Rob Holbert from Lanyap Mobile. One thing we were just mentioning off the air, that wall of remembrance is still, I saw it last year at Warrior Legacy Ranch at their property. It's right now at a location where a lot of people are going anyway. Just give you a heads up what it is, and you can check it out for the next week or so.
Yeah, I think until November 8th, so just before Veterans Day, that wall of remembrance will be out in front of the waterfront restaurant in Daphne. And we had Patrick jump on with Warrior Legacy Ranch to tell us about it before the wall came back down to Baldwin County. But this honors the lives lost in 9/11, Operation Enduring Freedom, and Operation Iraqi Freedom. And there's a special section there for veterans who have since died by suicide. 120-foot long, double-sided wall, thousands of names. You mentioned that you saw it last year. It's pretty powerful stuff.
It really is. And it's it goes in sequence from the events themselves.
It's chronological.
Chronologically sequenced. And you just suddenly remember about this, remember about that.
And yeah. Boom.
It's very well done. It's at the waterfront restaurant right now.
So it's fitting that it's out in front of Panini Pete's place down there. He's done so much for veterans over the years, and big help with Warrior Legacy Ranch and Romans Warrior Foundation, part of this as well, along with other partners. So that'll be out in front of the waterfront until November 8th. And then a few days later, it's Veterans Day. It's a Tuesday this year, November 11th. Reminder that Mobile Mornings will be live from the Veterans Day Parade, the beginning of the route here in Mobile. We've done that every year now. It's been, well, I can't even think back how many years we've been going down there. We've had to move our location. We used to plant the mobile command unit right there in the Civic Center parking lot. That's become an issue over the last couple of years.
Yeah, of course it has.
We found a nice spot last year right there near the beginning of the parade route. We'll find it again this year. But would love for you to come down. It's as the vets and everyone who participates in the parade get ready and stage for the parade itself. So we'll broadcast from down there. We'll have some snacks and goodies, and it's all brought to you by LNS Air again this year. So we appreciate Larry and the team there, but we'd love to have you November 11th, Tuesday, as we get ready for the Veterans Parade. And come down, not for us, we'd love to see you, but plenty of veterans, you can shake their hands and talk to them about their stories down there as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And I talked to my friend who's the administrator up there at the Veterans Home in Bay Minette, Stephen Davis. So I'm going to try to get up there, maybe get an interview or two with some of the veterans who are now living there. We've had some remarkable conversations with some of the guys up there. And it's always time well spent. And it's time well spent for me, and then for me to be able to bring it back and then present it to you all. We'll try to see if we can't do that.
You do such a great job with that. It's become a thing every year.
And it's good for me. And like I say, it's time well spent always going up there and seeing those people. That's a very well-run place, by the way.
And that reminds me, too, and I want to pull this up just to give you the exact date, but with Baldwin EMC, and I know Sean had Mark Ingram on not that long ago to talk about their upcoming Power of Giving drive, which they
Blood
do
drive
every year.
Yep.
Yeah. And when they do that, and let me pull the date for you here. But they also, leading into the Christmas holidays, which we're headed towards on a rocket ship right now, they collect goods for William F. Green Veterans Home. And they make it easy for you to go and give blood, which is already a great thing, but also bring some items that some of the folks there that are living at William F. Green, some of the things they need. And that's coming up November 6th, the Baldwin EMC Power of Giving Blood Drive and Veteran Supply Drive from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. in Summerdale. But we'll talk about that more as we head towards that date next week.
You were busy. You were up. You're watching a great baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
World Series, the Blue Jays now have got a 3-2 lead.
Yeah, not so much a great game. It was pretty good, but
great the performance.
Performance from that rookie pitcher, Trey Savage. That's what this World Series has been. Shohei Ohtani, Guerrero, Freeman had a great walk-off not that long ago. And then this rookie pitcher, Savage, has been a series of great performances.
I just can't imagine being, like, I played baseball, never was the pitcher. Think about it. When you're the pitcher or the quarterback in football, right, the attention is on you. I mean, nothing starts until you do something, right? And you got to pitch. You have to pitch a baseball. 22 years old to be able to in the World Series a performance like that. That's
on the road.
Nerves of steel.
Yeah, it was really impressive. And you're right. All eyes were on Savage in the baseball world, but internationally, all eyes were on the presidents of the two biggest powers in the world right now.
So we're all anticipating that now. Trump. Because of the different time zones and such, it was late at night for us that all this news was breaking. It looks like the agreements have been made, and it looks like some concessions in terms of fentanyl manufacturing and rare earth possibilities. Mm-hmm. So let's get into all that. What's the nuts and bolts of the agreement?
Yeah. So I was watching last night as both presidents gathered for their meeting, and of course all the pomp and circumstance that surrounds that. And then an hour and 40 minutes later, when they came out of the meeting, it was just before midnight here Central Time. That meeting wrapped up, may have been a little bit earlier than that in our time zone, but they apparently did come to some deals. And, you know, you're always trying to read faces, read body language when a meeting of this kind of magnitude is taking place.
Sure.
And you have the different partakers of the meeting there on camera. And Xi Jinping didn't say much, which is not unusual for him as they first shook hands and had the media taking pictures and then went into their meeting. So Xi Jinping wasn't talking much. Trump was. He kind of laid out how he was expecting the meeting to go. And then they got after it. And then an hour and 40 minutes later, they come out. And that's really where I was trying to read their body language.
Sure.
Trump seemed to be domineering, as he tends to be, as they were leaving the meeting, and really seemed to be kind of roughing up Xi Jinping, kind of uncle style, you know, like I love you, little kid. Like,
yeah,
push it on his shoulder and rubbing.
He's not that much smaller than Trump. He's not a small guy.
He's not. But watching Trump kind of, you know,
roughhouse him a little bit.
Rough him, yeah. And maybe it's a little overblown the way I'm putting it. But it did seem like there was a little, hey, yeah, that was a good meeting, right? And kind of shoving on him and stuff. And then as Jinping was walking to his presidential limo. And they had that entire, you know, convoy that they take with them, mm-hmm. including his security agents, as the limo drives off, running outside and beside the limo, which I always enjoy seeing that.
Yeah.
And then the Trump's...
Get the little wind sprints in.
Yeah, they're running along. So he took off, and then Trump's crew, they got him protected. And then Rubio and Lutnick, Susie Wiles, Besant, and their entire crew kind of walking across the tarmac to Air Force One, where Trump eventually ended up. But apparently things went pretty well, at least according to our president. He announced we have a deal, and on the scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being the best, I would say the meeting was a 12. That's mm-hmm. how Trump rated it on Air Force One. We have a deal. Every year we will renegotiate the deal, but I think the deal will go on for a long time. Now, what did they agree to? According to Trump, Xi agreed to pause for 1 year Beijing's new export restrictions on the products made with rare earth and critical minerals. And the markets, of course, have been completely up in arms about what's going to happen with all of those materials. So they've apparently come to a one-year deal on that, and Beijing will loosen up those restrictions. The breakthrough averts Trump's threatened 100% additional tariff on Chinese goods, mm-hmm. and that was set to take effect Saturday, November 1st, in protest of those export restrictions. So
I remember that.
He's taken that down. Trump said Xi also agreed to a renewed crackdown on fentanyl exports, and that the U.S. in return would reduce the 20% fentanyl tariff on Chinese goods to 10%. And that would bring the average tariff on Chinese goods from just around 57% down to around 47%. And they're not the leader in the clubhouse anymore as far as the highest tariffs.
Who's got it?
Now Brazil and India both are.
They're going to guess India.
Their
okay.
tariff rates are at 50%. And it's interesting, too, side note, Senate Republicans, and really it's the four you expect every time.
Massey?
You have Paul. No, he's in Congress. You have Rand Paul, you have McConnell, Murkowski, and Collins. And here this week, they've voted along with Democrats in the Senate, basically admonishing Trump for his tariffs on Brazil and then Canada yesterday. The House doesn't seem like they'll go for it too, but it is notable that some of the Republicans are pushing back on the tariffs now.
That's true. That's true.
Also, the farm products was a big part of this meeting, specifically soybeans. Trump said Xi committed to buy, quote, tremendous amounts of soybeans after halting purchases this year in retaliation for the fentanyl tariff. And Trump, who said he plans to visit China again in April, quote, what can I say? It was an outstanding group of decisions that was made. A lot of decisions were made, too. There wasn't much left out there. I thought it was an amazing meeting. And then on Truth Social, Trump said China also agreed they would begin the process of purchasing American energy. He said, in fact, a very large-scale transaction may take place concerning the purchase of oil and gas from the great state of Alaska.
You know, Trump didn't just have a good meeting, which was excellent that things got worked out with China before Saturday. He had a good trip. In South Korea, the president there presented Donald Trump with the South Korea's highest honor, the Grand Order of Magawana.
Okay.
I don't know if I said that right.
I thought that was maybe a new Mardi Gras career.
He said the crown symbolizes divine connection between the authority of the heavens and the sovereignty on earth, as well as the strong leadership and authority of a leader. So that is the highest honor they have in South Korea, and they presented it to Donald Trump when he was there.
I'm sure he appreciated that,
sure he
along with the many other treasures he's been given on that trip, and a lot of people, you know, taking shots at Trump and the Trump administration for the crown being handed over, the no king stuff.
But I know
it wasn't Trump who asked, and maybe he asked for it. I don't think he did, but
no, it's funny, the no kings on the right after the latest no kings weekend,
he gets
country
a crown.
Gives him a crown.
That's too much sometimes. But I think he was probably more excited about the trade deals that he reached with South Korea, and again, by his account, securing nearly $350 billion in investments in the economy. And this was part of South Korea trying to lower their tariffs. He said the deal includes Korean Air purchasing 103 Boeing jets, and those will be powered by GE Aerospace engines. That's $50 billion for that package. And they've also committed, apparently, to buying 3.3 million tons of American LNG annually and invest $3 billion in U.S. power grid infrastructure. Roughly $200 billion will be paid in cash installments over 5 years, with the remaining $150 billion in loans supporting joint shipbuilding and port projects. And with all of those agreements, Trump has agreed to cut South Korean goods, the tariffs on those, to 15%. He was making deals left and right.
He was. He was making, and you know, you can't discount any of this. I mean, he seems to show up somewhere, receive quick, large honors, mm-hmm. and then by the time he leaves, they've got substantial deals with the U.S.
Also, part of the conversation between Trump and Jinping were semiconductor chips, mm-hmm. and you know, NVIDIA, which just became the first company to hit $5 trillion in market value, they were a big part of that discussion, and they've been used as leverage in this trade war pretty much all the way through, and so they basically agreed Trump will allow China to use NVIDIA chips, which he had been really tightening the screws on allowing that.
Yeah.
But he said they will not allow China to use the new and most improved or the best NVIDIA chips that are out there, which a lot of national security experts were concerned, handing China some of the best technology that we have,
sure.
In this race for, you know, technological dominance.
Are we already behind is the question. A lot of people would say yes.
A lot of Chinese people would tell you yes.
Yes.
Some Americans would too. It's tough to tell though with all the propaganda. And remember too, a lot of this China meeting, a lot of this was announced by Trump. We've had this happen before where he puts his certain spin on how things went, and then I'm mainly thinking from Russia and China.
Yeah.
You hear back from them, and they see things a little differently.
The narrative's a little different.
Yeah,
right?
They continue to negotiate after the fact.
821 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings, Dan and Dalton. Good morning. Morning from from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Did you happen to see the story? Maybe we'll get to it late in the show. Letter in a bottle found 109 years after it was off the coast of Australia. And what was the contents of that letter? What did it say? It's pretty interesting stuff. It's historical.
Yeah, message in a bottle.
Message in a bottle found 109 years late. you're talking about all the deals that Trump's been making, in other parts of the world. Of course, the one deal that we're not getting done here, he's not kind of involved, but not necessarily. At the crux of the deal is obviously with the shutdown. The U.S. economy could lose up to $14 billion due to the ongoing shutdown. This is a new analysis from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. They released that projection. It's day 30 of the shutdown. And so depending on how long it goes on, it could really, really cost the U.S. and sting the economy. So chop, chop.
Yeah. And, you know, it really will be interesting how much pressure comes from, you know, the SNAP program benefits drying up here beginning this weekend, the Supplemental Nutrition Aid Program. We were talking yesterday about, we've been talking about how many people nationally are on the food stamps, but here in Alabama, and you basically broke it down. You said between 1 in 6, 1 in 7, and there's been some more statistics that have come out, about 15% of Alabamians on the SNAP program, 754,000 people. But some of these counties, and AL.com broke it down by county.
Oh, wow. I can imagine.
Some of them, well over 1 in 3 are on SNAP. Lowndes County, just west of Montgomery, 32.3% are enrolled in SNAP. Dallas County, 34%. Wilcox County, 38.4% of the population is enrolled in SNAP. Perry County, 38.7%, and also Greene County, 31%. And if you look at some of the nearby counties, it's closer to 25%, and that includes Clark, Marengo, Choctaw, and Hale. Pretty wide discrepancy, too, between Mobile County and Baldwin County, which I think you would kind of expect if you broke it down.
What are those numbers?
So in Mobile County, 20% enrolled in SNAP. In 2024, that amounted to over 41,000 households, over 83,000 recipients.
I got a guess. I have a guess for Baldwin County.
And Baldwin County, what percentage do you think?
8.
You're very close. 9.09% in Baldwin County are enrolled in SNAP, or about 21,800 recipients, just over 10,000 households in Baldwin County.
Interesting.
Yeah, wow. So it will affect a lot of people and a lot of people in South Alabama. But I'm wondering how much, you know, and who will fold, if anyone does fold, maybe both the Republicans and Democrats do, if this reaches a certain boiling point. And you know, speaking of reaching a boiling point, you kind of keep your eyes peeled. We had the No Kings protest, which really didn't amount to a whole lot, right? But the country still seems kind of on edge. And you see this story from NBC 15, where in a neighborhood, and this is over on Houston Street, there were a couple people tearing down pride flags all up and down this neighborhood. And it was interesting to me, and everyone was checking their video footage, and even one person down there, I believe on Houston Street, kind of followed this van where these two men, I guess, were hopping out and pulling these flags down in these different homes. But the van had plates from another state. It was a Washington State license plate. I'm thinking, because I don't know, it just doesn't seem to me like someone here locally that lives here locally would go around and ripping flags completely out of a neighborhood. The Washington State plate kind of throws me off there. There's been an update, and NBC says they've located a van several Midtown residents believe is connected with the vandalism of more than a dozen pride flags. Several residents caught pictures and video of the men. Their faces were covered. MPD hasn't released many more details since, saying they're only conducting interviews and have additional leads following the NBC 15 story. I wonder if these aren't just troublemakers from somewhere else coming down and trying to create some conflict.
I really want to know the identity of those guys. I missed that story completely. Wow.
12 to 15 pride flags.
In the middle of the day?
That's what it looks like.
Wow. Rob Holbert with Lanyap. He's on the way. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings at 8:35. Now we really get down with all the journalism by talking with our friend from Lanyap.
Rob Hulbert's on the line with us, as he is every Thursday. Good morning, Rob.
Morning, guys. How are y'all?
Hey, we're great.
Really good.
And, you know, off the heels here of this municipal, these municipal elections that we had in August and then the runoff, we're headed right towards some more campaigning with the midterms around the corner and a lot of other offices up for grabs. And so the announcements have been rolling in, and Lanyap's been covering every one of them. But big news yesterday, maybe not unexpected news. Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch says he's running for re-election. So add him to the mix here of local folks who will be spending some of their time campaigning here over these next few months.
Yeah, he added that yesterday, and I think Senator Chris Elliott announced that as well yesterday or the day before. So they're kind of coming in saying, hey, we're running for re-election. I don't think the sheriff at this point has anybody running against him. I don't know if Elliott has anybody running against him either, but, and I don't know if anybody will run against Sheriff Birch. I know that Paul Prine has made some noise, but he's also kind of mentioned about five different things he might run for. So who knows?
Yeah, and we were kind of running Prine's candidacy up the flagpole last week for those different offices that have been mentioned. And when we brought up Sheriff, the response was pretty immediate. A lot of folks saying Prine wouldn't stand a chance against Birch. And I think we saw this with the Halloween decorations kind of story where that certainly raised some emotions on both sides. But the support for Birch is very evident.
Yeah, I think Paul's done a good job as sheriff. I mean, all that other stuff is, it's ancillary to his job. I mean, it's a distraction. I wouldn't get involved if I were him, but that's his deal. But I mean, doesn't make him a bad sheriff either, and he's done a good job, I think. So, he probably has a very good chance of being reelected.
Let me ask you, Rob, because I've seen I've noticed sheriff races in the past. I'd never have really had a big one going on while I've been on this job. Maybe when Birch won a few years ago. Maybe that was
that wasn't very contentious. I mean, once Cochran retired, it was pretty much a done deal.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. And in the history of this county, have we not had some contentious races for sheriff that were?
Honestly, I don't know that I've ever covered a very contentious race for sheriff in my life. I mean, it always seems to be pretty cut and dried about who's going to be the sheriff.
Okay. Just kind of also settles in on itself, right? Just kind of
I think Baldwin, Baldwin may be a little different. I don't know that there's definitely going to be a little more fireworks over there, I think, but for the sheriff's race. But, it's one of those positions that's really tough to – it's kind of like a judge. They don't lose very often.
Right.
The incumbents don't lose very often.
That's why you hear these sheriffs in these small counties being there for 40 years,
Yeah,
I mean, most of the time in judge races, nobody even runs against them. It's pretty rare to see a sheriff, beaten, an incumbent sheriff beaten or a judge. So, people just tend to – those tend to be – almost life appointments in a way, as long as you don't do something egregious.
And we're going to see, too, kind of a test of the name recognition importance in a race. We've talked about so many former coaches, Paul Feinbaum, the commentator, he's been mentioned in the race for Senate, but A.J. McCarron, and the drumbeat started growing that McCarron was potentially looking to run for political office, and I don't know if we got to this last week because he made the announcement, I believe, Thursday last week, but McCarron running for lieutenant governor, of course, tons of people, not just down here, know who McCarron is, but being a national championship winning quarterback for the Alabama Crimson Tide.
I think he won two with them.
A couple of them. His name recognition is off the charts. Now, whether people want him to be their lieutenant governor, that's the next question.
Well, I just right off the top of my head, I mean, if the average person, if you asked him, what does the lieutenant governor do, he'd probably say, I have no idea. It's not one of those positions where you obviously know exactly what they do, but preside over the Senate primarily, but also that's the person who takes over if something happens to the governor.
Right.
Yeah, you know, AJ, I saw, I guess I was walking through Greer's a few weeks ago, the Greer's marketplace downtown, and saw a commercial being filmed with him standing there in a suit, and I thought, well, I guess he's running. And so, yeah, that so it wasn't a surprise.
Yeah. Sometimes you really have to work for a scoop.
I mean, he got off to kind of a rough start because it came out that he had never registered to vote.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a stub your toe moment to begin with, but it's certainly not disqualifying. We'll see what happens. He's against two guys who've already started campaigning. Wes Allen, the current Secretary of State, kind of beat him up on the whole not voting thing. Mm-hmm. They're Wes Allen, also a guy apparently who played for Alabama as well.
He did. He was more of a scrub.
Another football player.
But,
yeah. And, Wes Allen came out this week with his own plan for keeping people who are not natural-born U.S. citizens from holding certain offices in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
So that's his
Give us your thoughts on that stopgap or whatever it is he's trying to. And, of course, he's not a lawmaker, so he can't do it himself. I guess he just proposed it, and some of the other lawmakers are going to move it forward.
Well, I think my partner, Ashley Trice, described it most precisely as a solution looking for a problem.
Kinda, yeah.
There's nobody. I mean, first of all, I don't think we've had anybody that is not a U.S. citizen or a natural born U.S. citizen who's held any of these constitutional offices in Alabama. The other part of it is, it's really one of those things. It's just this sort of like jingoistic type of thing. I would encourage Wes Allen to go and watch a naturalization ceremony and watch people become U.S. citizens. I got to see that last year out at a Jags game. They had a bunch of people come out.
I remember
out there
that.
It was pretty moving, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I mean,
it was a very moving experience and a very, it felt really patriotic. It felt mm-hmm. very like, wow, these people really want to be American citizens, and I was kind of blown away by it. The concept that those people shouldn't be allowed to hold public office because they were born somewhere else, because Wes Allen's terrified of foreign influence or whatever it is. There's smarter pieces of legislation I've seen. Let me just say that.
Well, and you said, it's a situation looking for a problem. I'd say it's a Minnesota problem with an Alabama solution. It's not an issue we're having here, but in other parts of the country, they kind of are. But to me, it seems sure. kind of like we've seen with Steve Marshall so often, really raising a national issue, but on the state level. And I don't know if the intent yeah. is to get more national media coverage or whether it's for this to be fought out in courts all the way up. I don't know, but it did seem kind of out of left field.
I think the intent is to pander to people's fears and their focus on national issues is what it is. And it's a lack of focus on local issues. That's the biggest issue I've had with Steve Marshall all along is, he spends all of his time doing things that are based on, going and signing on to lawsuits in other states and other things like that, while corruption runs rampant in our own state. He does very little to nothing about that. I mean, that's his job here.
Right.
These are the types of things that I think people will spend their time on when they don't have something else to really run on. And that issue, I think there's a lot of things here in Alabama that need to be fixed that are actual problems. The concept of worrying about somebody who was born somewhere else, who is a U.S. citizen, wanting to run for office is really the most minuscule problem we have. We don't have that problem.
And it doesn't show much confidence in the constituents, and the voters is kind of one of the issues I have with
right,
it.
Right. It does. Yeah. I mean, it takes, I think we calculated something that's like 80,000 people in Alabama that basically disenfranchises them from, these are 80,000 citizens, not non-citizens, 80,000 citizens in Alabama. It disenfranchises them from running for office in those positions.
Speaking of voting, we got a guy running for the lieutenant governor who throws a nice spiral.
Yeah, McCarron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I know that much about him.
Mm-hmm.
I watched him do it live. He throws a very nice spiral. Hey, we're gonna have a new mayor here real soon, and I know that Sandy spoke with you guys some, and so his legacy and now his kind of anointment of Spiro.
Yeah, well, I think this is the time. I mean, I wrote my column this week. I think Sandy Stimson's been our best mayor. I think he's been a top-notch person all along. I know there's people out there who probably will disagree with that, but those people, I think, probably don't remember what it was like prior to him getting here and what he did. And, you know, maybe you're forgetting that we didn't maintain trucks. We didn't pave roads. We didn't do a lot of things. We had a $15 million hole in the budget. All those things that were going on prior to him becoming mayor and where we are now. You know, Mobile's not utopia yet, but we're a lot better off than we were, and I think he's done a tremendous job.
Yeah, and, you know, really getting love at the city council meeting this week from, well, everybody, it seemed. And you could tell that folks on both sides of the political aisle appreciate the mayor, and he has done a really good job bringing in so many things. I mean, we had that announcement last week with Carnival coming back with a bigger ship, so we'll have our largest ship at port ever, and tie that with the Amtrak and all the projects going on and the street renovations. There's a ton going on, and it's all because of Sandy Stimson for the most part.
I mean, you know, look, I hate to always give the council short shrift. They've done a great job too with him. They've worked together. He has managed to really build a coalition. Not everybody always agrees, of course, but I mean, when you remember when he first got on, you know, became mayor, there was a lot of contention between he and the council. There were a lot of, you know, that's not really the case now. The council and the mayor's office, while they do have differences, they manage to work them out. They come to a lot of consensus. They build, you know, as he said to us, you know, when he first became mayor, he really disliked the Zogby Act, but he's come to really feel like it's best for the city because it means when you get something done, you've got votes on both sides and everybody's coming together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you've got a majority of people on the council who are agreeing to something. And so you've built something that that everybody feels like they're winning.
More sustainable.
Well, yeah.
And let's talk about the next mayor, too. And he'll be officially the mayor of Mobile on Monday, Spiro Chiarigotis. And interesting kind of side note here, too. So I believe it was Tuesday while all of that, and he may have actually been in attendance at the council meeting, but I know something else that Spiro was doing this week. At my daughter's school, they do this super reader week. They have people come by and read books to the class.
Yeah.
And in her class, Spiro Chiarigotis and his wife Lucy came and read to them earlier this week. So even though he's not campaigning anymore, I know he's still out and about and preparing to take office here. But Lanyap reporting that he'll unveil his administration next week, and that's something we haven't heard much about at all.
No, I mean, I don't think there's going to be a bunch of huge surprises there. You know, I think a lot of the people who are there will be remaining there for the time being, at least. And but I don't know who they are at this point, and he'll unveil that. Maybe there will be some surprises, but I doubt it's going to be there's not going to be a big shakeup, I don't think. You know, he's got a big shoes to fill, of course, but there are certainly many paths where he can achieve greatness for the city, and there are many things left to do here that could be improved, and you know, he can move the city forward. So there's a lot to do, and you know, it's a busy job, and I think hopefully he will be up to the task. I think he will be, and you know, we'll be watching to see how he does.
Sandy made it look busy, that's for sure, because Sandy was busy, right, Dalton? Mm-hmm. I mean, you look up and one initiative after another. He's a very busy guy.
Sandy was busy, and I mean, people got their money's worth. That guy had put in hours. I mean, I will say that.
Yep.
You could see him early in the morning. You see him late at night. He's busy. And, you know, it is a busy job. So, you know, mayor can really affect, it's probably a position, one of the political positions that affects your life the most wherever you live. You know, mm-hmm. who the mayor in your town is really does. It's a real rubber meets the road position. You know, it's your potholes. It's big vision. It's everything. You know, the whole nine yards.
Yeah. And, of course, every candidate has and will always run against crime. That was the case again this year, but with, you know, three shootings in one day on Tuesday, crime's still an issue here. It'll be interesting to see if there's any new initiatives or if there's a different kind of tact taken here by the Spiro office dealing with crime around Mobile, but that's something we'll have to just wait and see.
It's tough, man. You know, and I think it's just really the culture of people shooting one another as, you know, responses to just about everything at this point. And that's an issue everybody's having everywhere across the United States. And so, you know, hopefully I would love it if it's a solution, you know, that comes from Mobile. It would be fantastic. Yeah. Maybe there will be.
Yeah, well, Spiro's, you know, his time on the bench, a different perspective on all this, and he even mentioned it during the campaign. So some of his tactics may be a little bit different.
We shall see. We shall see. Hey, Rob, great edition of Lanyap on stands now and online as well. I know right after the show today I'm going to go out and grab a paper copy, but I have it on my website too. How can folks sign up online?
Go to lanyapmobile.com. It is just $1 for the first month, and it's $9 a month after that. It's just 30 cents a day, folks, for daily news, Lanyap Daily. We're putting news up all the time. So plenty of stuff if you're missing, if you're not online.
Dalton's like Lanyap obsessed. He's got it on his computer, and now he wants to go grab another one.
Be. You can make a paper hat out of it, you know, for Halloween.
Got it. All right. Thanks, Rob. We'll talk in a week.
Y'all have a great day.
Yes,
bye.
Sir.
Rob Holbert with Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. And coming up, we'll wrap up the show, let you know who's coming on with Jeff Poore, and get to some text all on the way on Mobile Mornings.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings at 8:55. Hopefully you've enjoyed this morning's show. On the way, another show that you can invest your time in.
Yep. Jeff Poore show on the way next. He'll have former congressman and, again, AL1 candidate Jerry Carl on after 9:30. April Marie Fogle joins Jeff from 1819 News after 10:30, and then in the 11 o'clock hour, Travis Johnson with Pathway Church set to join the Jeff Poore Show. And I hope you stay tuned for that. And also make sure you're texting him, 251-343-0106. And we'll go to some of those texts right now. Josh says, Rob sounded like he woke up on the left side of the bed this morning, not sounding as neutral today, he says. Jason says, as far as the Wes Allen proposal that only natural-born U.S. citizens should be able to run for office in the state, and he'll have was it Marcus in the state house pushing that legislation, and the it escapes me who's going to endorse it in the Senate. We had the story the other day, but Jason
Garland Gutter,
maybe it's Gutter. I can't remember. I'll have to look back at that, but. Jason texts in, it's called getting ahead of a problem. I'm sure there are a lot of people in Minnesota that wish they would have had that in place years ago to avoid the Omar loon. With the numbers of Democrats moving into our area, times and voting patterns are changing. And, you know, I agree that it's a problem in some of these other states. And you look at Michigan and you look at Minnesota. Especially Minnesota, it seems. It
seems to me the Catholic Charities help all these Somalians into the state, and of course they would end up occupying one area
and a voting kind of block.
They became a voting block.
Yeah, and so we've seen that happen. It's not something that any other state is doing. I think it's going to bring a lot of national attention, which we're pretty good at here in Alabama, bringing national attention. But I keep coming back to this. I know so many natural-born Americans who hate this country, who would be terrible leaders. And certainly, you know, I want somebody who's running for any office to love America and love their community. But I know a lot of people, and I've heard stories of a lot of people who weren't born here but love this country and have and would make great leaders. So I'm kind of split, not so much split. I don't know if it's the best idea, this kind of legislation. It seems to me like it's going to be fought out in the courts eventually.
There are many, many people who, you're right, are more positive about what this country means to them and the possibilities of this country. You know, the new citizens are the ones that are often the greatest champions.
Yeah, but I imagine this will be quite the go-round once the legislative session begins in January. There's going to be a lot of discussion on that topic.
Great. 8:49, Jeff Poore on the way.